Hello, producer Al here. Just to let you know, Phil and Sid recorded the first few minutes of today's pod outside before it got quite windy and they took shelter in the podmobile. And that means there is a quite annoying wind noise for about 2 minutes of the podcast. I would have taken it out, but it was a bit where Sid was talking about being at the Wanda and it felt quite important. So you can either skip around about 2:30 to 4:30 in the pod, or you can listen to it and put up with the wind noise. I'll leave it up to you to decide. Sorry about that. And TSFP's usual impeccable production standards will resume for the next podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Sydney, have you recovered?
Not entirely, no.
It was quite possibly the most exciting day in La Liga history that we can remember. Certainly in the 8 years that we've been doing this podcast.
Yeah, it's definitely the pod's most dramatic day. Yeah. And there's still one more to go, you know.
Yeah, there's still one more to go. And anything could happen. When I say anything could happen, two things could happen. Atletico Madrid could be champions, or Real Madrid could be champions. Yes. And then in terms of the relegation battle, which was also very exciting yesterday, although it got slightly overshadowed by what was happening at the top of the table, two from three will join Eibar in the Segunda División. And those two are Huesca, Elche and Valladolid. Anyway, this is what happened on match day 37, which was played on Sunday. All games at the same time, kicking off at 6:30, which just added to the supreme intensity of the afternoon. Alaves beat Granada by 4-2. Real Madrid beat Athletic Club by 1-0 at San Mamés. Atletico Madrid came from behind to beat Osasuna 2-1. Barca lost at home to a brilliant Celta Vigo side, who recorded their fifth consecutive win. Betis beat Huesca to secure European football 1-0. Getafe beat Levante 2-1 to secure their place in the top flight for another season. Elche came from behind to beat Cadiz 3-1. La Real thrashed Valladolid 4-1. They were 4-0 up after 35 minutes. I don't know if you heard Michel speaking afterwards. He said, "Hemos hecho el ridículo." Yeah. Valladolid, who of course could be the kingmakers in terms of the La Liga title race. Valencia relegating Eibar by beating Los Armeros 4-1 at Mestalla, and Villarreal thrashing Sevilla by 4-0. Loads for us to talk about, but we have to start at the game which you were at, Sid, at the Wanda. At the game, which was the real epicentre of all the drama. Atletico Madrid 2, Osasuna 1. I'm going to start by asking a question I often ask you. What was it like to be there?
Extraordinary. and it was, you know what, it was slightly different to the way it had been on Wednesday night. Remember, we talked about how Wednesday night had been a game where Atletico were in the lead, but the tension towards the end was almost unbearable because of the risk that they would throw it away. Now, this was different because, of course, they were chasing it. So it didn't have that same feeling of tension, but it was still incredibly tense. There was still that sense that everybody was playing. As we talked about in midweek, you know, you were looking down on where the subs are and they're kind of getting closer and closer to the pitch. They're drawn into it. There's a real sense that, oh my God, it's happening again. And actually, I suppose one of the most startling things about this was that when it came to it, they were relatively calm. Not calm, but still relatively calm. 1-0 down with 8 minutes to go. They need 2 goals in 8 minutes. You know, you're talking about a season where you've played at this point nearly 37 weeks, 37 and 36 and 3/4 weeks. You've got 8 minutes to go. You need 2 goals. And also, and as Simeone made this point after the game, at a stage, and maybe I should apologise now for tweeting, they're bringing on subs now, but it's gone and they know it's gone. Mm. At a stage where they completely stopped making chances, because they had, by the end of the game, they'd racked up 26 shots against Osasuna. Osasuna score 1-0 with their first shot on target. Atletico had taken 16 shots by half-time. They were brilliant and just didn't finish. And there was this kind of fatalism taking over.
Well, yes. I mean, particularly that fatalism emanating from yourself,
because you were
telling you that it was done.
You were like, it's done, it's finished. No, and I was believing it because obviously you were there and you can sense it.
Yeah,
you
I absolutely could, by the way. And as I say, it wasn't the tension of midweek that this is a disaster. It was just the tension of, oh, it's gone. I don't believe it. And obviously the tension was there, but it was more like, I don't believe it, it's gone. And there was this kind of feeling of, God, this is unbelievable. And yet at the same time, so completely believable, if you sort of mean. And then they responded, and they responded really, really well. And the weird thing, in a way, I suppose, is that it wasn't a massive siege. It's not like they were... They basically scored with, I think, two of the three chances they made in those final 8 minutes. The first one is a lovely, lovely pass from João Félix, a player who's been criticised a lot this year, so I think it's worth pointing out how good that pass was and also how active he was when he came on. And there was a moment, and you know, try and make sense of my notebook, it's not easy, but there's a scrawled note just before the goal, and it says João Félix sprints, and I've underlined the word sprint because there's a moment when one of the defenders, Osuna defender, has a ball and he really goes for him, like to try and get it, really fight. And that's something we haven't seen a lot of from him, and I know that's simplistic, but I thought that was significant. And then Atletico Madrid, well, they score two goals. The second one is Luis Suarez, which I think is particularly significant for a number of reasons. Pre-game, Diego Simeone had said, and I think he's right, by the way, we're entering into the Suarez zone. This is a player who has been in these kind of games before. This is a player that we need to... I mean, the phrase he used, which translates horribly in English, was to resolve situations that we need him to resolve. In other words, to be decisive. You know, the moment has come for this guy to carry us through, to be decisive when it really matters. He has the... that lovely word they use in Spanish, jerarquía. I suppose the leadership, the status, the
status,
the status to kind of carry us through. And of course, that's sort of right. And I think that's one of the reasons why they can still win the league, is because they've had that kind of player. But of course, this happens, and Atletico Madrid have a brilliant first half in which Suarez misses five chances. One of which is an absolute sitter that he puts against the post from about a metre. Although actually, in fairness, with the replay, you see that the angle's a little bit tighter than it appears because of the defender in front of him, but it still is a terrible miss. And you think, maybe it's not Suarez's zone after all. He makes changes, Simeone, and he leaves Suarez on the pitch. And I don't know if that was because he got some idea in his head. He then explained it after the game with total rationality, and this is one of the other things. For all the tension, there's a rational element to all of this. And he says, well, look, I was trying to bring players close to the area. I was trying to get João Félix close to the area, Carrasco close to the area. We've got Dembélé on the pitch as well. And I thought, if you want some, if the ball's in the area, you want someone like Suarez there. When the goal comes, the second goal, so the first goal is a brilliant finish from Lodi. The second goal comes 87-35, I think it was. And in a time in which there's a temptation, I think, just to put the ball in the box, Simeone's on the touchline shouting, be calm, don't just put the ball in the box. And it comes to Trippier, and Trippier plays that pass he's played 100 times this year. That little angled, short pass into kind of an inside position just inside him. Normally, of course, it's Llorente who gets those. This time it's Carrasco. Carrasco then waits as well. He takes his time, he takes a step, he steps back again, and he pulls it back across. And Suarez, rather than going in, has stepped away from the crowd and he's waiting on the penalty spot. He then still has to finish it. Now, admittedly, it's a relatively comfortable finish, but he needs Dembélé jumping out the way to put it in the bottom corner. And then everyone goes absolutely nuts. I have genuinely tried today to count how many players are in the pile of bodies in the corner. And I don't know the answer. I've looked at one photograph. I've counted 26 feet, right? But of course, the photo's only from one side of the pile. So there's bound to be more than 13 players in there.
Do you know what I tried to count today? The number of times the commentator said the word goal when they scored the second time. Well, I got to about 87 and lost count. So
fantastic.
It was...
on the telly or on the radio?
No, Talavera, on the radio.
Fantastic.
It's an unbelievable amount of goals in a very short period of time as
well. Well, I'm glad you said that, because in the piece, in the piece I've written for The Guardian today, I didn't know how many it was, but I mentioned the point that the goal, the commentators rattle off at 500 goals per minute. So do you think that's about right?
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. Unbelievable. Speaking of sounds, could you hear the fans outside? Yes. Like clearly inside the stadium?
Very clearly. And one of the things that struck me, and obviously this is entirely natural,
is that there's a slightly delayed reaction to the goal. Well, of course it's natural because they're watching on their phones, which are like 50 seconds delayed.
Yeah.
Even the radio broadcast, so Talavera saying, go, 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 like that, sounding like he's drowning.
Yeah.
Even that takes probably 15, 20 seconds to get to them.
Yes.
And, of course, the real giveaway for them is that you get the goal music in the stadium played, which probably reaches them before anything else. But even that has kind of like a 2 or 3 second delay.
Yeah.
So you get this roar from inside the stadium. And I think they hear probably something, but they don't know for sure what it is. Then you get the... Duh, I think they use Seven Nation Army, don't they? Like everybody else in the world.
Well, you tell me. You were there yesterday. Duh, duh.
I think they do use Seven Nation Army. And then you hear this roar from outside. The problem is that the roar itself then gets drowned by the inside stadium music. You'd rather there was no music inside and that we got their roar. There was a moment, by the way, in the first half when you heard a big roar from them.
Mm.
And it was because Barcelona had conceded.
Mm.
And I was with a colleague and actually said to him, that's really daft. Don't do that because they'll think it's Madrid. Because the Barcelona result really doesn't matter. So, you know, don't cheer the Barcelona goal.
Yeah.
And Suarez admitted after the game that he didn't know what the results were in the other game. And he asked, when they had that water break, which is what, about 12, 13 minutes from the end. He said that point he asked what the score was.
Why did they have that water break?
I was wondering this. It was warm in Madrid yesterday, but I thought the threshold was 30 degrees.
Yeah.
And it was probably not quite 30. It might have been at pitch level, to be fair. Might have been. It was very warm. I mean, maybe the threshold's 25. I might be wrong. But yes, I was struck by that.
Hmm.
And of course, it allowed Simeone to have one last time out, effectively, with his players.
Which he said. What did he say then?
Well, he said...
Could you almost hear him?
No, I couldn't from up high, I must confess. The television said they could hear him. And he'd said... he said, cabeza fuerte, strong heads, you know, be strong, and tranquilidad.
Hmm.
It will come.
Mm.
He then said after the game, and this bit wasn't picked up by the TV cameras, but he said after the game that he'd also said to them, get the equaliser.
Yes, and then
because
the
second
will
one will follow if you get it. And actually, he was completely right. And I'm going to say this because we've asked questions this year about his changes.
Mm.
His changes absolutely worked yesterday.
I mean, we've been asking serious questions about those changes.
And they absolutely worked yesterday.
An unbelievable amount of drama in Madrid. It was also, well, slightly less dramatic in Bilbao, but it was exciting. Not the first half, Athletic Club against Real Madrid. I don't think there was any shots. It wasn't great.
Yeah, I think I saw a stat saying no shots each at half-time, at least on target anyway. I don't know if that was in total.
It did ramp up a little bit in the second half and we saw Real Madrid take the lead. And for 19 minutes, Real Madrid were top of the table.
Yeah.
Hmm. Nacho, who scored the
and
goal
of course,
for
not
Real
just top,
Madrid,
by the way, but top it, and by a point as well. It wasn't even just head to head at one for the last of those for the last what was it eight of those
yes
ten of those
yeah. But not to be for Real Madrid, they did what they had to do, but they know that it's not in their hands. It wasn't in their hands, and it won't be in their hands going into the final day of the season. Shall we talk a little bit about Zidane?
Yeah, okay.
What's going on with Zidane and his future?
Well, Zidane, in his pre-match press conference this weekend, offered very, very heavy hints that he was leaving. Now, I think he's done this a bit this year, but he's quite... He doesn't always express himself brilliantly, and he can be a little bit... I don't know if incoherent is the word, but certainly contradictory in the things that he says. This weekend, I thought it was much clearer than previously, albeit still not 100% crystal clear, that he was going. You tally that to bits of information that we get, which I will confess at this stage are not absolutely clear cut. But you know, the pieces that kind of come together to tell you a story of a man that's going. And here's the bit that I think maybe is different. Certainly the way it had been told to me, and again, this is a little bit more indirect than I would like.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I wouldn't absolutely nail my colours to the mast on this.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is he gone, but the Madrid have known that for a while. And everybody has known that for a while. Now, what happened this weekend was a story was put out. Fernando Burgos on De Cero, who's very well connected, but not very much not with the president. He's not one of the kind of the president's men, and there are many of those in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that Zidane had told the players that he was leaving. Zidane last night denied this, and he said, you know, why would I do that on the eve of a really big game? You know, the damage that could do and all the rest of it. Now, obviously, on one level, that's logical, but I must confess, I don't think it necessarily does do any damage.
Hmm.
I also think, and this, I'm not going to claim credit for this, I thought this was a nice way of putting it, Alex, producer Al, was saying to us yesterday, that his understanding of it was that Zidane had said something a bit like he has in the press conferences, which could be interpreted either way.
Yes.
And that perhaps some players had taken it one way, even if it wasn't necessarily intended that way.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't continue.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, I don't have that hard enough to actually stand here and say to you for certain he will not. But I would be surprised if he's still there next year.
Whatever happens. So if they,
whatever happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see. As we said, Real Madrid got the job done. And they got the job done thanks largely to players like Modric and Casemiro, who really stepped up in the second half. It was Casemiro who provided the assist for Nacho to bundle the ball home. And there they are, going into the final day of the season with a small... I mean, we're not good at maths, right? We're really not good at maths. Yeah. Regular listeners to the programme will know that. I give them about a 20% chance. What do you think?
I honestly don't know now. I mean, that would make sense, something like that, because you would say that, look, the bottom line is that Atletico Madrid should beat Valladolid.
Yes. Right?
But we've seen a lot of shoulds this year, and they don't all come off. Valladolid are fighting for their lives. That said, the way they're playing at the moment doesn't look like a team fighting for their lives. Atletico Madrid could have been in a much stronger position yesterday because Valladolid needn't necessarily have survived yesterday. There was a point at which they were down early in the games as the results came in. They are not down now. I think it's when Huesca get beaten by Betis that they're not down. For what it's worth, I've only seen one view of it. But I'd like to see it again because I thought the Betis penalty was laughable.
Yeah, well, Pacheta's not very happy.
Like, really laughable. Like, just that... Come on, we can't be giving fouls for this.
Atletico Madrid have only won 2 of the last 8 away games.
Yeah, and that's the other thing to remember in this. They only need to draw for Real Madrid to win the league, if Real Madrid win, by the way.
Yes.
Now, that's the other thing we can't necessarily take for granted. Although we're making, maybe foolishly, an assumption... Because, of course, Villarreal are 4 days away, not 3 days now, 4 days away from a Europa League final. Mm-hmm. And so I think they will make major changes, even though, in theory, this is important for their European finishing. And even though they've requested they get brought forward a day, which has happened.
Think of all the upsets that we've had this season as well.
Exactly. The other thing is, you know, I've said this all season, and you know, it's always worth pointing out when you're wrong. Well, not necessarily wrong, but when it doesn't work the way you say. I keep saying, yeah, but Madrid are that team that you have to kill them off. Or they're there, they'll always come back for you. You can always trust them. They'll always find a way to get away with it. And actually, in a way, winning 1-0 with a goal off the shins of Nacho is kind of quite a good embodiment of their season, isn't it? And yet, I have this kind of supernatural faith in them to somehow find a way through, even if they're, you know, even if it means very good fortune, even if they haven't played very well. The last 4 or 5 weeks has suggested, actually, it's Atletico doing this now.
Mm.
The Atletico that we build up, and I include myself in this, I'm every bit as guilty as everyone else is, you know, the jinxed one that somehow will find a way to throw it away. Well, look at the last few weeks. The penalty against the post, the messy free kick that swings just wide. All right, they're beaten in the last minute by Athletic. But the game in midweek when the last few minutes, they're absolutely terrified against Real Sociedad and they find a way through. The two goals late on in this game. I'll be honest with you, at 1-0 down, I did think that's it.
Mm.
I thought there's no way this happens now.
Mm. Well, what's changed? I mean, do they have...
I don't know. And maybe let's go back to what we said at the start. Maybe what Simeone said was right. Maybe there is something in Suarez that carries something that other players don't have.
Mm.
But as I say, I thought the tranquility that saw them through yesterday was João Félix's, Trippier's, Carrasco's, and of course Lodi's for the finish. By the way, Lodi had Suarez standing alone and didn't give it to him.
Mm.
And looking at the replay, I think that might have been good luck because I think Suarez might be offside.
Ah.
I think if he rolls it to Suarez, he might be offside. Instead, he produces a brilliant finish. And I really like something from Lodi as well, who I think is a player who has big flaws defensively. In fact, he defends really badly on the Osasuna goal. He runs back and he's signalling to everyone, come on, come on, we can do this now. By the way, 5 minutes added. 95-15. Old Black has to make a brilliant save from Chimi Avila. I mean, they all are brilliant. Comfortable-ish, but good save. They almost blew it again.
I know.
It's amazing.
We've spoken about Real Madrid. We've spoken about Atletico Madrid. Those two will battle it out on the final day of the season. Atletico travel to Valladolid, who need to win to have any chance of avoiding relegation. Real Madrid hosting Villarreal, who, as we mentioned, have the Europa League final in 4 days' time, or 4 days after the final day of the La Liga season. So it's not over. It could still be absolutely thrilling.
It absolutely isn't over.
Also, Atletico could be 3-0 up after 15 minutes. But anyway, it's probably...
Yeah, but Atletico just don't do that.
Yeah, well,
I mean, maybe they will this time.
They haven't.
Yeah,
they haven't. Yeah. We've not talked about Barca yet, and we need to mention them going out of the title race with a whimper.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, look, obviously, partly it's possible to argue that they lost this way because they already knew they were out of the title race. But this is what...
It's a bit like last year, isn't it? They lost that home to Osasuna. I think it was on the penultimate day, and there was...
Which is another reason to think, you know, had Eibar been able to get through this weekend, they might have thought they'd have a chance in the final day against Barca, which they now don't, because they're already down. But I was going to say, look, on one level you say, well, they partly lost because it was already done. And yet, of course, this has happened because they lost when they had the opportunities.
Yeah.
They lost against Granada. Yeah. That's the really big one. That's the one that they must be looking at and thinking, how does this happen? And I think in a way, you know, after the Levante game, Busquets said this. He said, well, this is a little bit the story of our season.
Yeah.
At the end of this game, Koeman said, you know, we have loads of chances. We're far better than the opposition. And we've one shot. And it's one shot they score against us. Mm. Which, of course, contradicts what Koeman then says later when he's asked about Messi. And I think he's right, by the way, but I also think it contradicts him. He says, well, I hope Messi doesn't go because it's impossible to play without Messi. He says he scored 30 goals this season. If he's not there, I don't know who's going to get the goals. Now, obviously, part of the answer would be, well, there's this Uruguayan fella at Atletico, and that's a flippant answer, and I appreciate that's not necessarily fair. But the other part of the answer, which again is a bit flippant, but I think it's right, is to say, well, as you've said in the other part of your post-match appearance, that's not your problem. Hmm. Your problem is that you give away really rubbish goals consistently.
Consistently,
that there isn't the tranquility that Atletico have, the toughness that Atletico have, that resistance that Real Madrid have, it just isn't there.
I was looking at the half-time table in La Liga. Mm. If matches only lasted 45 minutes, Barca are 6 points clear at the top.
Wow.
There has been a consistent aspect of their game this season where they've gone to pieces in the second, well, gone to pieces, thrown leads away. They've consistently thrown leads away, and games that they've had control, they've had under, you know, they've been in control. Cadiz at home, when they were 1-0 up, they could have been 3 or 4-0 up. They conceded a ridiculous penalty late on. Granada as well, we talk about that game, they were in control of that game. It should have been 2-0 and they threw it away. There are others as well this season. Where does this leave Koeman? Again, we've asked this question before.
I don't see a scenario in which he can possibly stay. Now, for those of you leaping right now and saying, come on, that's really unfair, I'm not telling you what I think should happen, although for what it's worth, I wouldn't keep him either, depending on what the alternatives are. I'm telling you what I think will happen. And I think that there are things that Koeman has clearly done well. There has been, I think, a degree of, I think, respect for the way that he's brought younger players in. Mm-hmm. I think there's been a sense that he's connected with parts of the dressing room. I don't know if of all of them, but with parts of it. There have been moments when things have been done pretty well. They performed really impressive from January through to the back end of March. Mm-hmm. And the trouble is that's only 2 months. And yet, can I put this in very blunt terms? Mm-hmm. Well, everyone absolutely slaughtered Setien. Setien's Barcelona finished better than this.
They didn't win the Copa del Rey.
No, okay. Everyone slaughtered Valverde, miles better than this. Now, I don't want to reduce it to that because it's not fair. And a lot of people will say, but this was a transitional season. And I think this is another point that's worth picking up on. It sort of was a transitional season.
It was a transitional season they could have won the league in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They worked themselves into a position where they could have won the league and then didn't. And that tells you something about some of the flaws that they've had before, which are not necessarily about Koeman, but nor did he arrest that slide. Mm. But it also, here's a big question for you. Why? Why was it a transitional season? How were we in a position in which Barcelona kind of accepted for a lot of the season that that was the case? I think far too much was made of Barcelona's supposed we can't compete. You look at their squads. Mm. Sorry, Barcelona's squad is better than Atletico Madrid's. And, you know, I've seen it. I can't remember where I saw it now. Reading, because I think I mentioned it to you actually off air. I've read somewhere that Atletico Madrid have the best squad in Spain.
Yes.
So, well, do they?
Yeah.
I mean, their best two players are Luis Suarez, who Barcelona didn't want, Marcos Llorente, who Real Madrid didn't want. You tell me another Atletico Madrid player who would be an automatic starter at Barcelona or Real Madrid.
Yeah, Black.
But they've got Courtois and Ter Stegen.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a matter of taste. But
I mean, I personally would have Savic in both of the Madrid and Barcelona teams. But he's not like he's someone that they're going to be desperate to go and sign. Mm. But my point really here is that I think there was a willingness to embrace the idea of a transitional season at Barcelona, which I'm not saying is wrong, and I actually quite like the idea that there was some patience, although now he's demonstrating that perhaps there won't be patience. But I'm a bit baffled by it, because I think it was overplayed.
Wasn't the off-the-field stuff as well?
Yes.
I mean, it literally is transitional in terms of the
in everything. Now, that leads us to the other thing about the question as to whether or not Koeman continues. One of the reasons he doesn't, of course, is because you've got a new president. Koeman isn't his man. Mm-hmm. A new president who's not massively enamoured of Koeman. If he can get an alternative, probably will have him. I love this thing, by the way. They had lunch last week.
Yeah.
And they both claimed they hadn't talked about his future. Oh, I see. Right. So, 2 days before the end of the season, two games before the end of the season, the president and the coach have lunch when they both deep down know the season's over. And you're seriously expecting us to believe that no one talked about the future?
Not only that, but they had lunch quite publicly in a central Barcelona restaurant. I mean, you know, there are lots of places you could meet for a quiet lunch without attracting hordes of press. Laporta is a man who is known, he likes a big gesture.
He does. The curious thing is, so far, he's been a very quiet president. Very unlike him.
So far.
Think you're right. I think he does like a big gesture. The question really would be, what is that big gesture?
Well, it's bringing Xavi.
It's bringing Xavi, probably.
Basically. Listen, dear listener, if you're enjoying this chat, why not join us at patreon.com?
Even if you're not, you can join us.
Patreon.com/TSFP for daily content on Spanish football. We've got loads of stuff over there. We'll have a Q&A podcast out tomorrow. So if there's anything that we haven't covered on today's pod, send us a question. We'll talk about it tomorrow. We've got a bonus pod coming up on Thursday as well. And our series TSFP Presents Sliding Doors. We finished it last week looking back at key refereeing decisions, sliding doors moments in the history of Spanish football because of refereeing decisions. We've got a whole archive of great Spanish football podcast series for you to enjoy. So come and join us, patreon.com/TSFP. Let's talk about the relegation battle and the one team that has been confirmed that will be in the Segunda next season is Eibar. After 7 years, they should have gone down 7 years ago. They didn't because they were
rescued by Elche's financial crisis. Yeah,
It's quite sad. I mean, Eibar should have, really no way. They shouldn't be in the Primera División.
No.
Not for money, not for size, not for prestige, not for history. They're nowhere a top flight club, and yet they came up in 2014, and actually they sort of led, if not quite a revolution, but I felt like they were the first team that I'd not quite heard of that much, and they came from a small place that had never been in the Primera División. Later we've had Leganés, later we've had Huesca, those kind of teams, but sort of Eibar were the first, and it's been great to have them in La Liga for 7 years. They knew, everybody knew, that it wasn't going to last forever. They've done incredibly well and had some incredible finishes as well, almost fighting for European football on some occasions, but this season they've gone down and they'll probably be bottom.
Yeah, the miracle of Eibar really was that with each passing season, it didn't feel like a miracle anymore. Mm. It felt like they belonged. And I think in a way that removes some of the sadness. The inevitability removes some of the sadness this season, because I think they recognise that they had seasons that they weren't necessarily expecting and that they've used those seasons well. If you had been to Ipurua before they were a first division club and you go now, it's recognisably the same space that they're in, but the stadium feels very, very different. It's been modernised enormously. It's bigger. On two sides. The other side, which is wedged in, because it's wedged into a valley, so you haven't actually got room to construct, but they've managed to construct where there wasn't really space to construct in. They are financially very, very stable. They get the equivalent of a parachute payment in the first season in the second division, which gives them a good chance to come back up, or at least a good chance to stabilise things. And I think this is the thing. Had they gone down at the end of that first season, they might not have come back up. They now probably will at some point, not necessarily straight away. But more importantly, they will now consolidate as a first or second division team. And this is a team, bear in mind, that really are a Segunda B team, not even a second division team for a lot of their history. And I think the sensible approach, the stability that they have, means that this can be seen as time gained and not wasted. Mm. They haven't gone chasing and signed players they can't afford. And I think they're very, very sensible. There is a shift this summer, which is that their sporting director, Fran Garagatha, who'd been sporting director, I think, for 14 years, 15 years, something like that, is going. There's no sense that he's failed at all, but he's going. So I wonder how they manage that. Although, obviously, this is a structural thing that's much more profound than just a sporting director. So I think they're in a good way. In fact, when I was there a couple of weeks ago, when Kiki Garcia scored that hat-trick, was talking to some of the people at the club there, and they'd already accepted that they were going down. Mm. And I suppose in a way the pity is the last 2 weeks had given them hope that maybe they wouldn't. And they were kind of quite relaxed about it, in the sense that, well, look, we knew this.
Mm.
And we embraced it, and we've worked hard enough that we now know that we probably should come back, whereas 10 years ago there was no way we should have been here in the first place.
Mm. They are a club, as many do in the Spanish top flight. They've been selling their best player every single season.
Yes.
Basically, you know, Jean Jordan, yeah. Orellana, Escalante.
Exactly, Ruben Peña, yeah, loads of them. And it's the way their structure works.
Yeah.
You know, put very simply, the sporting director describes it as, if I have five, I only use four of them.
Mm.
Five for Euros, I use four. You know, and so you're always saving something. You're always holding something back.
Mm-hmm. Alaves and Getafe breathing a huge sigh of relief, having survived the scare of going down. When Alaves, Javi Calleja took over, they were bottom.
Yeah, this is the amazing thing. He has won four games.
Yeah.
In eight.
Yeah.
That's as many as Pablo Marchin won in 18.
Yeah.
And it's four times more than Abelardo won in 11.
Yeah. That's a huge, huge impact from Calleja. They're safe. Getafe are safe as well. A magnificent goal from Take Kubo.
Yeah, very nice goal indeed. And Bordalas afterwards said, this is the biggest achievement we've had since I was here. Never mind getting into European football, all that stuff. This is the biggest achievement in a season this difficult. Now, obviously, for what it's worth, I don't agree with him.
No.
But I can understand why, as the season started to...
Ajax.
Exactly. I can understand why, as the season reached this stage, he started to at least hang on to that discourse.
Yeah.
You know, to try and, what would you call it, value what they'd achieved in surviving.
Two of Huesca, Elche and Valladolid will join Eibar. It'll be Elche and Valladolid. Presumably, they're the ones that are there. It's not in their hands. If Huesca win, they're safe. Hands.
But Huesca have got...
Valencia.
Valencia. I don't know that Valencia is necessarily easy.
Mm-hmm.
Valladolid, you would imagine, they have to win against Atletico.
Yes.
I wonder if that's one of the things that might play into Atletico's hands. That it's not like Valladolid can go for a super defensive approach.
Mm.
They're going to have to try and attack Atletico at some point.
Or maybe they just go super defensive until the last 5 minutes. Well, stay in it, and then
that's perfectly plausible as well. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
So let's see what happens. We now know that all games are going to be played on. Well, the games that have anything riding on them are going to be played on Saturday. Thanks for clearing that up.
Oh, La Liga
took a while.
You know, once in a while, La Liga really do make it hard for us to love them.
Yes, they changed it 3 or 4 times. But as it stands, Friday night you've got Levante against Cádiz. Then Saturday, Celta Betis, Eibar Barça, Huesca Valencia, Osasuna La Real, Madrid Villarreal, Valladolid Atleti and Elche against Athletic Club. And then on Sunday, nothing riding on Granada against Getafe and Sevilla against Alaves.
And it was worth pointing out here that it's not just that they changed them from Sunday to Saturday, which I think was the right decision because it was designed to give a little bit more time to Villarreal for the Europa League final and to minimise the probability that they basically rested everyone for the Real Madrid game to maintain, if you like, the sporting integrity of that match. I think that's the right decision. But it's like, why are you doing it now? We knew this weeks ago.
Mm.
You just put it on Saturday in the first place. There were suggestions from Fernando Roche, the president of Villarreal, that this had happened to avoid clashing with Eurovision.
Yes.
Which, by the way, was why the Copa del Rey final was played on a Friday in 2013.
Right.
I do not understand why Eurovision is a thing, but there you go. I don't know if there might be some state-related thing going on because it's kind of a Europe-wide, pan-European... I don't know. Anyway, it just seems
surely
nonsense.
Surely not.
Seems total nonsense to me. And the Copa del Rey final was different because it was on TVE, whereas this is on Movistar.
Right.
But it's worth pointing out, not only did they do that, they also included the Eibar Barcelona game in the list of games that didn't matter because Eibar are already down and Barcelona can't win the league. It only got changed because the producer at Carrusel and Cadena Ser Radio, Jorge Escorial, put a tweet out saying, hang on, this is wrong. Eibar cannot survive, but they can be part of a freeway tie, which they're involved in, which would produce a different result in the relegation battle than a two-way tie. In other words, they can impact upon the future of Elche. So you can't have them playing on a different day. Now, for what it's worth, I think you probably can, but you know, you've got to be seen to do this right. So the league could only even realise this because a producer on a radio show had pointed it out, and they'd literally changed it about 15 minutes after Esco had put that message up.
Viva la Liga, baby!
I mean, they do so many things right, but to do... I mean, honestly, come on.
Anyway, that's what's happening next week. What happened this week in the Segunda? There are three rounds of games left, plus the playoffs. We know Espanyol are already promoted. Mallorca are second on 75 points. They beat Alcorcón 2-0 yesterday. They will go up if Almeria fail to beat Castellón tomorrow. I think they'll go up anyway, whatever happens, if they win their game away to Tenerife on Wednesday night. So Mallorca look like they're returning with the Espanyol.
Here's a question for you.
Yes.
Mallorca and Espanyol, they come down for a season without fans. They go back up when the fans come back. It's been perfect for them, hasn't it? If you're going to get relegated, yes, what a way to do it.
Absolutely. If you get relegated and no one sees it, have you even
actually... Has it actually happened? Have you been in the second division?
In the playoff places, Almeria are third on 67 points. Leganés are fourth on 66 points. Sporting are fifth. And Rayo are sixth. Girona are seventh. They're level on points with Rayo. They play Sporting tonight. It's very tight to try and get that final playoff place.
And on Thursday?
And on Thursday, it's Rayo against Real Oviedo.
So, given where Sporting are...
Want Sporting to win, mate.
Do we go to Vallecas and lie down for you?
Yeah, come on. Please. That's it. But our Patreon, we said, we'll have the Q&A pod out on Tuesday. As always, answering all your questions. Bonus pod on Thursday, looking ahead to the final round of La Liga. And don't forget to check out our latest TSFP Presents series, Sliding Doors. There's a clip of the final episode on referees out here now on the Monday podcast feed. So make sure you check that out. Enjoy the football. It might not be as tremendously exciting as it was this weekend. It's difficult to imagine it could be.
It's difficult to imagine, but I mean, this season has done it all the way through for us.
Absolutely. We'll be back next week.
It's a curious thing, though, isn't it?
What?
That we're talking about drama and all these turning points.
Yes.
But we've had the same leader for 5 months.
Yes.
That suggests there's been no turning points at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Sydney, I was about to leave. I was about to say goodbye. Yeah. But it would be very, very highly, extremely unacceptably remiss of me to do so without mentioning Barcelona and their women's team winning the Champions League final, thrashing Chelsea.
They are a phenomenal
by four
team.
Goals to nil. I mean, domestically, they are on not just another level, they're in another Milky Way.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable, their domestic
they
record.
They are a phenomenal team, and I think what they did yesterday demonstrated that it wasn't just domestic, that it wasn't just the weakness of the other teams, although certainly Atletico Madrid this year have massively underperformed in the Liga Iberdrola. They've really seriously underperformed. But I think the destruction, because bear in mind, I think of the four goals that they got yesterday, didn't they all come in the first 40 minutes or 35 minutes, I think it was. They're so far better than everyone else. It's really quite extraordinary. They're a brilliant side.
Do you know how many goals they conceded?
I do. I think it's only five, maybe six.
It's five in 26 games.
I mean, it's incredible. And it must be 120 goals by now.
The goal difference is plus 123. 26 wins from 26. Astoundingly good. And they've also got four games in hand as well on the other teams in the Liga Iberdrola. Congratulations to Football Club Barcelona, Barcelona Femini, for winning the Champions League. First team to win both the men's and women's Champions League.
I didn't know that. I didn't realise that was the case. Right.
So there we go. Congratulations. Like we said, we'll be back next week discussing the final round of matches in what has been the craziest of La Liga seasons. So make sure you join us then. Adios.
Cheerio.